the personalities that come and go at ESPN, Linda Cohn is a mainstay. In fact, she's anchored more SportsCenter episodes than anyone. February 21st, 2016 marked her 5,000th, and a wonderful accomplishment for a pioneer in this industry. It was nearly 25 years ago, July 11, 1992, that she made her debut, and I asked her what she remembers from that evening.
Yeah, I'd like to say it seems like yesterday, but it really wasn't. It was a long time ago. I just remember that I so wanted to prove to people that I belonged on that stage. I so wanted to prove to the viewers that I was a fan, a sports fan, just like they were. And most important, I wanted that to kind of burst through the screen. And I remember I was nervous, but once I got going and I worked with the great Chris Myers, and, you know, the shows back then were only a half hour, and this one was on a 2 a.m. Eastern on a Saturday night. And, I just was kind of really focused and most important, didn't want to make any mistakes. But my mindset was more like, you know, you can do this. And I wanted to prove to people that I belonged on ESPN.
You must have got a lot of college kids tuning in if it was 2 a.m. on a Saturday.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's amazing how many, young people, you know, would watch and watched, and a lot of them obviously grew up with me. I mean, I have two grown children myself, but that's what I get a kick out of when I run into people. A lot of my fans are from, 18 to 34 demographic, and then they still are fans of mine, and I don't have a problem when they tell me they grew up with me. I think that's a compliment because I'm still doing my thing and doing it well.
Yeah, absolutely. ESPN, of course, keeps a lot of stats. I'm not sure if it keeps this stat, but do you know who you have been most frequently partnered with on SportsCenter?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know. I know they don't keep the stat, but I know I did a lot of shows with John Anderson. I did a lot of shows with, Stuart Scott, the late Stuart Scott, and Rich Eisen. I did a lot of shows with Rich Eisen. I'm just very fortunate that I've worked with plenty of talented people. And the key I always tell people to what makes a partnership work when you have a co-anchor on SportsCenter over the years is that they're not on their own wavelength. You can play off each other. You can be ready to play off each other and really feel like a team. And that's usually the best show when both anchors are really in tune with each other.
Are there any shows that you've done that stand out, particularly for the events surrounding that program?
There are several, some for stories that were done within SportsCenter. You know, unfortunately, it's usually involving people that have passed away, whether it's unexpected or something you knew was coming. I mean, I came in and I did my current SportsCenter slot is weekend mornings at 8 a.m. Eastern. And the most recent one that I'll never forget is they kept us on the air for 4 hours plus the passing of Muhammad Ali. And you literally have to kind of vamp and ad lib and talk about the subject of, one of the greatest, athletes of our generation who passed away, and figure out how to talk about him in so many different ways to so many different people, because it was a four-hour show of just booking guest after guest after guest, behind the scenes, and then people in your ear saying, okay, next you're going to talk to so-and-so, next you're going to talk, and you have nothing prepared. And so those are the biggest challenges, but also you know that everyone's watching, and that's the most recent one that comes to mind. But there are a lot of shows that are like that, where you're going to remember, because it involves athletes of our generation, whether they are living or accomplishing something or whatever it is.
One thing I think viewers associate with you when they watch you is your passion for sports, or what you're talking about exudes so well. But I read that at one point, I think it was around 1994, that the higher-ups at ESPN weren't getting that from you. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's true. And it's really a story that I like to share to young people when I go around doing speaking engagements where, you know, you can never give up your dream, your hope, and the belief in yourself. And, you know, after the first 2 years when I worked at ESPN, I really got no feedback of how I was doing. If I ever become someone in that role, I'm always going to give feedback to people and people that would work under me. But I didn't get it. And then suddenly after a show I did, it was a 6 o'clock Eastern Sports Center. I remember the day because it was the day of game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals when the Rangers were playing the Devils, which turned out to be a classic. Mm-hmm. Two of my bosses called me into their office, and basically I felt like I was punched in the gut. Not literally, but just felt like it because I didn't see this coming, where they just said, hey, you know, we know you know sports. We see you around the newsroom. We hear how you talk. We hear how knowledgeable you are and how passionate you are and how you always have a lot to say about everything and know it. But we're not seeing it come through the screen. We're not seeing it when you do a show. We're not seeing that inner confidence. So we're going to basically make you a lame duck for the next 6 months. You know, even though I had a contract for, you know, they had the option to pick up at least a year or two, they said, we're going to keep you on because we like you for 6 months and we're going to make sure we can see some improvement. And so actually they hired someone who they believed in, someone that actually looked at, that would give me, they kind of gave me help with doing highlights and different things and getting what they wanted out of me because they knew it was there. And that was really a great thing. And I really thank them for that because, and I was willing to do what I had to do to stay at ESPN. And it turned out to be obviously a great decision, a great move by them. And then, you know, within a couple of months, they were like, okay, we've seen what we needed to see. There's the Linda we know. And the rest is history. And literally it is history because in July, you know, July 1st will be 25 years.
Mm-hmm. Certainly the perception of women in sports media has changed for the better with more women in more prominent roles. And, of course, you have something to do with that change for the better. Are you pleased with the amount of progress that's been made?
I agree with that. There has been amazing progress, and it's always great to see. I especially love the fact that the progress with women in sports media, I see it in their roles as being analysts, mm-hmm. Talking about the sport, not being just a sideline reporter. Now ESPN was one of the first to sort of incorporate a sideline reporter with being an analyst for the game, like a Doris Burke, for an example, or a Buster Olney on the men's side for the baseball, where, you know, you have someone on the sidelines, but actually telling you stuff, whether behind the scenes, what's the X's and O's to what's going on during the game. And so now we're seeing that everywhere. But it's great to see with ESPN that they allow women, especially the qualified women, to do that and have that role. Now, I think where women can make more inroads is in management, in hiring decisions, like the big decisions made by networks. We're seeing that little by little, but I think it would be a benefit, and I think there's room for progress there in management, for women in management when it comes to sports.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. And as you were saying, people like yourself and Doris Burke, and I think of others on ESPN, Rachel Nichols, Susie Kolber, many others, we're seeing equal levels of acceptance between men and women in sports media. And you said, like, in analyst roles, not just, you know, asking questions, they're actually analyzing what's going on. And
right.
Also less and less of this, you know, she know this is going to be an old-time statement, like, she knows a lot about sports, quote, for a woman. You don't need that qualifier anymore. There's no need to distinguish the two sides.
Well, you know what? It's still out there. I'll tell you, it's still out there. I mean, you just look at social media, you know, because people have the courage to write whatever they can, you know, in 140 characters and get it right to you. It just doesn't matter. I mean, you could do, I've said this all the time, two things. A, you could do a perfect show, look great doing it, because women have to worry about all of those things. And there'll still be people that'll let you know, not as many as it was when I first started or in the middle of my campaign here, but they're still out there. There are just some that won't take their sports from a woman. And I always tell people, especially young women, you know, who complain about what they hear and see on social media, I say, listen, first, you chose to be in this profession, so you can't gripe about it. And two, you have to treat the good mentions with the bad mentions. Like, they don't matter. Like, it just doesn't matter. You just have to block it out. And I think that's very significant, and that's always a message that I try to pass on. And sometimes I have to be reminded of that as well, you know, because that's not the – that shouldn't be the reason why you got in this business. Mm-hmm.
So in the 75 episodes I've done of my show, I don't think I've ever talked about hockey until right now, because mainly because I don't know what I'm talking about. So that said, I'm especially glad you're on so I can branch out a little bit. And as little as I know about hockey, I do enjoy watching the NHL playoffs, mostly for overtime drama and the parody. And as we're talking right now, the second round is about to get underway. And we've seen many overtime games and a lot of very good teams, Chicago and Minnesota especially, gone. What makes the NHL playoffs, in your opinion, such a crapshoot where every team is virtually a contender for the Stanley Cup?
Well, it's an amazing spectacle, the 2.5 months of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Because what do we love sports for? We love it because it's unpredictable. And that's what the Stanley Cup playoffs give you. No other sport does that. None. The only sport that comes close in a postseason with as much excitement, I think, is the NFL postseason. But that's a distant runner-up. And because it's the intangibles with hockey, it's just obviously you get a hot goaltender who stands on his head. He can make a great team look weak. And, you know, the Washington Capitals found that out, where they can run into a team. Another intangible is a bunch of young players who have, you know, nothing to lose by going all out and believe, and you can pull an upset. What I especially love about sudden death overtime in the Stanley Cup playoffs, and it's just, it's incredible the speed. And, but what's most important, unlike basketball, I mean, my God, you can paint your house in the time to time, how many timeouts they have. You know, in hockey, especially in overtime, there are no commercials.
Yeah.
Zero. Mm-hmm. None. And they'll only stop halfway through to, like, you know, clean the ice or switch sides. They won't clean the ice. They'll switch sides. It's just cruel. It's just an amazing spectacle. It really is. And so, you know, I think people just need an emotional connection to a team or a player, and I think you'd see more people catch on. But I think many people are like you. Because of social media, they'll see, oh, my God, so-and-so and so-and-so is in sudden death overtime. All right, I'm going to turn to that because I know that's going to be exciting, and I'm just going to watch it. So I think social media has helped the NHL a lot, especially playoff time.
So not only do you love hockey just watching it, you also played it, and not only did you make your high school hockey team, you were the goalie. How impactful was that experience, participating in such a male-dominated activity, on how you took on your job later in sports media?
Yeah, I always bring this up because I didn't know this was happening when it was happening. I just wanted to play hockey, and I wanted to play with guys because it was a better game. You know, I was a good goalie. Obviously, I made the boys' team in high school my senior year. I tried out as a junior, didn't make it. Made it as a senior. And, you know, I was a kid with tremendously low self-esteem growing up, and this was a big step for me. I mean, I had played hockey before that with boys that were a lot younger, and I really had, I learned to have a tough skin. I mean, I learned to block out the noise and the whispers of people, of even mom saying, "What's that girl doing playing with my son?" You know, these kind of things. And then when I made the high school team, it's the same kind of thing. I mean, I just had to block out the critics and the noise and what is she doing on a boys' team? And you got to remember, back in the day, there were no girls on boys' team. But, so I was really ahead of the game. And so that really helped me prepare for what I was going to get when I worked in primarily man's field, which is sports media, sports broadcasting. And it really did help me prepare for that, how I cannot, allow the outside to have any say on what's on the inside of me. And all it was for me at that time, and living in that moment, was trying to be the best I can be, whether it's a goalie or whether it's, you know, being on TV or being on the radio and not letting what other people say bother me one iota.
And you make it no secret that you love the New York Rangers. Aside from the fact that you grew up on Long Island, was it a family influence that drew you to hockey in general and to the Rangers in particular?
Absolutely. It was my dad. He was great. He's no longer with us, but he was the sports fan that I became and still am, the kind that'll drop F-bombs, the kind that'll have a despise relationship with their favorite team, you know, the kind of fan that loved the roller coaster ride of the highs and lows and could deal with the lows because the highs are just so great when you have so many lows when the teams that you root for. So I enjoyed, that was really bonding with me and my dad to watch the Rangers, especially. I mean, I watched all sports with him, but the Rangers, something about watching the Rangers with my dad meant everything. And I'm just so glad I'm still the same way I was back then, and I'm the same way now when it comes to that team.
Mm-hmm. I know you also love the Giants, the Mets, and the Knicks. The latter two are favorite teams you and I both share, the Mets and the Knicks. Is there a particular team you take most pleasure in when they win?
It's got to be. I mean, it's so hard. I mean, I think of the four, the Knicks are last in that category. I think in the playoffs, I think, you know, the Giants, I think Rangers are one, and I think the Giants and the Giants are definitely right there. You know, it's 1 and 1A, you know, with the mm-hmm. Giants, and then Mets are 1B. You know, it really is. It's just, it's a thing when watching a baseball game, so even in the playoffs, you can really manage your emotions because you have all game to do so.
Yeah.
It's really different with the NHL and the NFL. NFL, because in the playoffs, as we all know, it's just one game, you lose, you're out. And then the NHL is just because it's so high intensity and every play matters and everything matters. It's, you know, the more you get into hockey and know it, you'll realize there's so many turning points and so many situations. So that's how I would rank them.
Yeah, and you were talking about 1994 with the Rangers. You were talking about Game 7, the Eastern Conference Finals, which, of course, they won, and then they went on to win the Stanley Cup. I mean, that team, I was reading something very briefly on, I guess, WFAN is celebrating their 30th anniversary, and they're ranking the 30 best teams or most important teams to New York in the last 30 years, and the Rangers came up third. The 94 Rangers came up third. I mean, that was
pretty good.
I'd have to guess that the 96 and 98 Yankees would be 1 and 2. I mean, I looked at it very briefly, but those 94 Rangers. I mean,
well, I would think the Giants upset of the Patriots probably when they weren't defeated,
yeah,
but probably would be in the top three. That's what I would say. But anyway, what were you saying?
Oh, yeah, but the 94 Rangers, as far as you remember, I mean, that was such a big deal, just considering it was 54 years and all the curse and everything like that for the city to win that Stanley Cup.
Yeah, and I mean, it's funny, I was in the building, I was at MSG, it was hard to get a ticket, I never asked for favors, and the guy that was running our hockey department at ESPN really didn't know me that much, and I said, listen, this was pre-9/11, so you could get a credential at the last minute mm-hmm. for a Stanley Cup Final, Game 7, so he got me a credential. I didn't have a seat, but I was just in the building, and that couldn't have been a better... his name was Mark Quinzel, and there were so many people on that night that I have to thank because he got me in the building. I was able to call my dad watching Mark Messier carrying the Stanley Cup. I then was with my friend Georgie, who knew that the Rangers post-game party was in the basement of Madison Square Garden at an old theater. I think it was called the Paramount at that time. And we got down there, and then Bruce Beck, who works for NBC Sports and still does in New York, he was happened to be at the door and somehow got me and my friend Georgie in that post-game party. And next thing I know, I'm going under a rope and drinking from the Stanley Cup.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
So it was really like, to me, there's nothing that's going to top that at all. I mean, that was just amazing. So it also took over. I mean, it really brought hockey in the forefront. We all remember the Knicks also were in the final. They could not win. But more people are excited about the Rangers than the Knicks. It was truly amazing. And that was that famous Sports Illustrated cover, you know, basically saying that, and had the pictures of the Rangers on it. You know, why NHL has surpassed the NBA in popularity, you know, something like that. So that's probably why it had such significance, not only in New York, but nationally.
Yeah, and I'd like to say if the Knicks were to win, and that's an if, a big if, that it would be certainly significant considering how big basketball is in the city.
True, that's true.
You know, and people cling to the 1970, 1973 teams so much. I was, you know, it's funny, I know you're not a Jets fan, but I was thinking, my cousin is a Knicks and a Jets fan, which I feel bad for him. Yeah. He's a Yankee fan. But I feel like who's more hopeless, the Knicks or the Jets? And to me, it's the Knicks, because in the NBA, it's so hard to build a winner, where in the NFL, you can turn around, it seems like, in a season.
I agree. And as long as Phil Jackson's running the show, the guy seems to just constantly is doing things to get fired, but James Dolan loves him so much, he's not going anywhere, so...
And when they're top two players, you don't know if they're top two players you really want to play for the team. That's a big issue as well.
Yeah, well, that's on Phil.
Yeah, exactly. One final question for you, Linda, and going back to just sports media in general, the advances that have been made in regards to sports technology, and we made reference to Twitter, the advances that have been made have made access to information far easier than it was just a few years ago. And as much as I like having that information, those scores readily available, there's part of me that misses the unknown. I like, you know, I'm a child of the 90s, that misses that when tuning into SportsCenter or highlight show, like kind of not really knowing what happened. Is there part of you that misses being able to provide the drama, the story of a game that the viewer probably doesn't know a whole lot about because there wasn't that access to the information?
Absolutely. And I'm with you. I mean, that was what made SportsCenter so unique back then, because our writing was the key. Like, all of us write our own stuff, and we had to build up the drama and lead the sports fan, the viewer, to that drama and tell a story heading into that highlight. But now, since everybody knows, it's just about seeing the highlight, and that is why we're seeing, you know, across the board everywhere, ratings are down in these kind of sports information shows, because people are getting it on their phones and they're also just want to see the highlights. What, you know, I think there has to be a change of how SportsCenter, now they don't ask me for my opinion, but they have to, I think they have to sell and bring back the 90s in a way and saying, like, we don't just give you the highlight. We're going to, you know, explain, you know, a lot of stuff in a 4-minute highlight, not just a highlight that's 45 seconds that you can get on Bleacher Report or on your phone, you know, type of thing. So it's challenging those who run networks, sports information networks, to figure it out, else ratings will continue to drop. But you're right. I mean, it meant more when to do a SportsCenter, because we really put a lot into it. We were there many more hours before a show than we are now, putting a lot into our writing and creating a story. But now there's not much need to do so.
Linda, I'm so glad we got to chat. I really appreciate your time. Thanks so much.
Good luck with everything, Brian.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks, you too. Be sure to subscribe to the Profiles in Sports podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, Google Play, and other places you listen to podcasts. Also, please check out our website, profilesinsports.com, as well as our Facebook page. And finally, you can follow me on Twitter @BrianWright86.